Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 299. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I am joined, as always, by Neil Ronahan.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Neil. We should probably make a plan for next week at some point.
Yeah, we'll do that, I guess. And it's Thanksgiving. I don't know.
Ooh, we could... We could take the week off.
Take the week off. Give us some time to plan.
And then just, no, we take the week off and then just come back with 301.
We'll do 300 later.
Yeah, I mean, we'll come back to it.
We have totally had unnumbered episodes on. So like 350 was actually like earlier this year. Or 300 was earlier this year, probably. Maybe even 350. Looking back at the archives, there's like, we did like the news digest episodes that were just on the same feed. Like I don't even know how many podcasts. It's definitely way north of 300 overall on this feed.
Yeah, you're not counting the crucial Blue Coins Cast episode.
No, that was 249 or whatever, 250.
Was that numbered? Okay.
Yeah, it was numbered.
Okay, never mind.
Better or worse. there's some plans going on. If you hear this podcast episode 300 on Black Friday, I'll be honestly surprised. It might be a little later than just because of the holiday.
But
that also gives us more time to figure out what we're gonna do.
Maybe it'll just be like me, kind of vaguely intoxicated, talking into a microphone by myself for half an hour.
Yeah, it'll just be like everybody gets like a tight 15 to just talk about themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't even record the episode together. Just send in all our segments.
I'll just pretend, like, John, that was a terrible take.
Just have those sound bites ready to go.
I mean, maybe the people just demand us to just go hard on our on The Last Jedi. Maybe that's episode 300. And then we cancel the podcast after that.
Well, I need Alex here because Alex on the NWR Slack the other day made a comment that I didn't respond to. Out of respect for Neil, where he said that the thing he liked about Last Jedi was how it wasn't just a rehash of the original trilogy. And I wanted so bad to reply with, I was like, yeah, they put the Battle of Hoth at the end instead of the beginning. Like, but we'll say that. That'll be 300.
And I think, didn't he also... like raise an eyebrow when you said Attack of the Clones might be your favorite Star Wars movie?
Well, it is. It's the best one.
I mean, I won't lie. I too raise an eyebrow at that. But also, I reached the point where I just accept that I think that Attack of the Clones might be a bad, terrible movie, but that doesn't mean it's not fun.
I think we give the original trilogy maybe too much credit. Like, we don't view it harshly enough in terms of its writing.
No, totally.
The most of the writing in the original trilogy is pretty much as bad as the prequels. So I just don't hold the original trilogy. Like, I love it, but I don't hold it in the untouchable regard that some do in comparison to the prequels.
To me, it's like why I like old like Ray Harryhausen movies too.
Yeah,
is because like those, it's not like those are good scripts.
Right.
But I think there's a charm to some of those like older practical effects or even like the stop motion effects.
I think
that's a key difference of prequels versus original trilogy, is that like there's a little more like we're putting on a show feel of like 70s and 80s Star Wars versus the we did everything on a green screen vibe of the prequels. And like I generally like it all, definitely prefer original trilogy to prequels overall,
though at the same time the prequels are very like, anytime somebody comments on the writing being cheesy in the prequels, I'm like, yeah, they're supposed to be. Like, it's 100% intentional. That's the point.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that there's a whole thing there where, like, the prequels are also like Lucas without an editor. And I think that dude needs an editor because there's definitely a lot of, you can see the George Lucas of it all in both the original trilogy and the prequels. But I think that what makes, to me, the original trilogy stronger overall is because you did have, you know, his wife at the time who edited a lot of, I think she isn't she just straight up the editor for the original trilogy movies.
Yeah,
I think, what is it? Yeah. Marcia Lucas. I don't know if when they got divorced she changed her name or not, And then even like, you know, like Lawrence Kasdan, you know, coming in to write Empire and stuff like that, and the directors that he worked with on Empire and Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
Like that I think you had that no one, it's not even that no one wanted to say no, or it's not that no one could say no, it's that no one wanted to say no on the prequels.
And as a result, it's so pure,
yeah,
and untouched.
Yep.
It's like virgin Star Wars.
In a lot of ways,
it's great.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like, and if there's, and that's the thing where, like, I understand where you're coming from, where you say that you're a weirdo who likes Attack of the Clones, because they're like, I get the appeal of it.
Yeah.
I personally think it's a shitty movie. But that doesn't, like, I get the appeal of it. And it's something that I think the sequel trilogy overall kind of lost, in that, like, there was that, it's that commitment to the bit of the prequels, yeah, that the sequels didn't have.
No, yeah, not at all.
Which is just the Marvelification of all of modern,
yes,
blockbuster cinema, which kind of started with the prequels, but that's an entire other episode.
Yeah. But you know what else reminds me of virgins?
Pokemon?
Yeah. Neil, you've been playing Pokemon.
I mean, I will say, when I played the first Pokemon at the age of 10, I indeed was.
ironically, we're talking about Pokemon BDSM. Pokemon Bravely Default Master System.
It was very difficult when talking with Nintendo PR regarding we got Brilliant Diamond and Shining Pearl. Every time I wrote an email about that, I had to check to make sure that I did not call it Pokemon BDSM.
Literally all of my files for like thumbnails and things like that from everything we've done during the lead up to this game, they are all called BDSM.
Yeah.
And only half of that was on purpose. The rest
was definitely an email that I wrote where I'm like, oh no. Like, yep. I'm like saying it in my head, Brilliant Diamond, Shining Pearl. Okay, got it. So that's Shining Masochist. Like, it's but so I've been playing that. Jordan Rudek, he played a lot more of the version that I've been playing Shining Pearl. He played through Brilliant Diamond. He's played a lot more of it. He penned the review. The video and the written version of that are up on NintendoWorldReport.com. But I played a good chunk of the game as well, and it's basically just exactly what I wanted. Like, that's mm-hmm. done. It's a remake of Diamond and Pearl. The visuals, like, I totally get that. I think people wanted something maybe a little more ambitious, but it just kind of is what it is. The visuals look pretty nice. It's definitely awkward, a little herky-jerky at times. I know Jordan called out in his review, and once he mentioned it to me, it's like the arrow in the FedEx logo, that like how the characters, the way they move, like they have to, like, they can't basically move sideways at all, so they have to like rotate direction in order to go anywhere. And yeah, there's some cutscenes where it is like hilariously awkward.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of moments like that that like visually kind of bother me. It seems like there's an extra hitch every time you enter a trainer battle or a random battle that just hangs there a little bit, which honestly is probably kind of how it was back in the DS anyway. So maybe that's just being a little too true to the remake.
Yeah. If anything, that does seem like the thing that you could accuse it of is being too accurate. And I know Jordan mentioned that he missed some of the more experimental elements of like the Let's Go entries. But I don't even know if Nintendo counts those among their Pokemon remakes or not.
And I think that's a third line. I don't know. I would love for them to go back to the Let's Go entries. I don't think it'll happen. But that's another thing that I kind of lamented while playing this game is I'm done with random battles. I think Sword and Shield, that was one thing that I got perfectly right. And even just the balance of, you did see a lot of Pokemon in the field. There were some aspects where it would be a random Pokemon that you would encounter.
Yeah.
Like, I like that balance, whereas you don't have that in Diamond and Pearl, except for in the coolest part that I found so far, which is, oh, and this is actually after the embargo. The post game is apparently very good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. This, like, is, this episode's coming out after.
Yeah. Yeah.
The game comes out, so you're good.
But I mean, I actually haven't gotten too far into the past the embargo point that we can talk about. But yeah, apparently, like, the post game is just very strong. There's a lot of, like, challenging legendaries to get, a lot of challenging battles that you can do after the game. And there is one element of, I started exploring with the Grand Underground, which, if you remember from Diamond and Pearl, there was this whole element where you would go underground, like, use the DS touchscreen to, like, tap and mine for spheres and stuff. So what they did in BDSM here is they expanded that a lot more. So you still have where you're tapping to uncover different items and currencies to get stuff in the underground. But they also have these places called Pokemon hideaways. So in these rooms, which there are, like, dozens of them across the entire Grand Underground, it'll be like a different environment, and the Pokemon will appear on the screen, a la how they did in, you know, Let's Go and Sword and Shield. The spread of Pokemon can be kind of, like, weird, and you can go there. I think it's like right around the second gym when you can first go to the Grand Underground. So when I got to that point, I wound up just spending a couple hours at the Grand Underground and got, like, hilariously overleveled. Had, like, I was able to run into and catch Pokemon that were, like, higher leveled than my highest level Pokemon. And, like, you know, like, Houndoom is one that I came across. I got, like, a higher level Rosalia. What else did I run into? I got a Rhydon down there. But there's a lot of different Pokemon, and then you can mess around with the secret base as you uncover different statues, so that way you can have it so, like, certain types will appear more often, which can be good for just getting a better variety of Pokemon. And by the time you hear this, I'm sure that Serebii will have however many Pokemon exactly you can find in the Grand Underground out there. But there are ones outside of the Sinnoh Pokedex that you can find in the Grand Underground, which I think is really cool. And from what I've heard from talking to people, is that the issue that I ran into, where for a stretch of the game, I was about 10 to 15 levels higher than every Pokemon fight that I came across because I spent time in the Grand Underground. Mm-hmm. That kind of evens out, because as you get to the late game and the post game, you're dealing with very high level enemies.
Okay.
So that's cool. Like, I think there's the potential that you will run into an issue where, like, a portion of the game will be easy, but it seems like it levels out by the time you reach the end.
Now, a lot of this post-game stuff is new. Like, it's stuff that wasn't in the original then,
I think there's a mixture of, like, similar things that were in Platinum. Like, I mean, one, it's been like 14 years, or I guess I haven't played Diamond and Pearl since it came out. So I think it came out in 2007. I probably finished playing it sometime in late 2007, early 2008.
Sure.
And I never played Platinum. I rarely play a third Pokemon game in a gen. I kind of learned, I thought Ultra Sun and Ultra Moon was fine. But then that reminded me, I was like, oh, this is why I don't do this. I don't like just playing the same world over again that closely.
Yeah.
I like the remake Cadence, because then it's like, oh, now I have wistful nostalgia for these mountains.
Yeah, I almost wonder, though, if it kind of feels like Nintendo may have shot themselves in the foot a little bit by not allowing reviewers to talk about the post game, because that seems to be a general consensus, is that it seems very, very good, but the embargoes didn't allow reviews to cover it.
Yeah,
which seems odd.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think some of that's just Pokemon Company being weird. Yeah. I remember, for Super Mario 3D Land, we could not talk about the second half of the game for reviews.
Yes.
So the good part, I think my review is very strained, being like, it gets better. I can't tell you how.
My favorite Nintendo is Nintendo that's pretty confident you haven't played the game this is a re-release of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or the Nintendo who thinks you didn't download Star Fox 2 like 10 years ago. and won't let you say that Andross is the final boss.
But yeah, I'm very content and happy with Pokemon Shining Pearl. It's definitely, it makes me happy that there's Pokemon Legends coming out in January, because it is like, this is old Pokemon They, you know, gave it a new hat. It looks a little visually impressive. There's experience share that you unfortunately cannot turn off. And like other stuff like Box Anywhere. So Lycan, Sword and Shield, and Let's Go. Wherever you are on the map, you can just go and like, you know, bring another Pokemon out that's in your PC. Because I guess like the flash drives are a thing in this. The cloud, you could pull from the cloud.
Yeah, I mean,
while you explore in a cave.
This is a culture that had cell phones in like their feudal era. So you would certainly think they ought to have USB drives by this point.
Yeah. But I'm stupid excited for Legends. Like that game.
Me too.
That game looks great.
Yeah.
And this game, Pokemon Brilliant Diamond Shining Pearl. It's when it was announced, they said it was going to be a straightforward remake to Diamond and Pearl. And boy, howdy. That's what it is. And it's a pretty good remake.
Yeah. And that's what I meant to reference that with the Let's Go stuff earlier, is that outside of Let's Go, all of like Fire Red, Leaf Green, Heart Gold, Soul Silver, and what is the name of the other one? The Alpha Sapphire,
Omega Ruby, Sapphire.
Yeah. All of those have been pretty, I mean, there's been little improvements just like this, but they've all been pretty straightforward in terms of being remakes, as far as I can remember. Granted, I'm not a huge Pokemon fan, but just from my experience with them, they weren't reinventing the wheel by any means.
Yeah.
You know what else? I was going to segue.
So you've been playing Halo.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if I should say it reinvents the wheel or it goes back to the old wheel. And then I was trying to figure out if I could make some sort of wheel to like the Halo ring reference.
You know, when Diamond and Pearl initially came out, it was the same year that Halo 3 came out. Does Halo Infinite feel like the heyday of Halo 3?
Kind of. Welcome to the Xbox segment of our weekly podcast, where we talk about all things Nintendo, such as Halo Infinite. The Halo Infinite multiplayer dropped I think it was supposed to be a surprise, though it had been widely rumored on the internet
Pringles
for a while.
Though.
Yeah. So it's the free-to-play component of their online multiplayer that goes along with Halo Infinite, which is not the half of Halo that I'm super into, which me and Neil actually talked about the other day. I play Halo for the plot. I'm a super big fan of the campaign.
Yeah, just like I read Hustler for the articles, John.
Yeah, exactly. but I enjoy the multiplayer as well. I'm just very bad at it, which is probably why I don't play as much of it. But I want to play the fancy new Halo on the fancy new Series X. So I downloaded the multiplayer. And I got to say, having been playing a fair amount of Master Chief Collection, like replaying a bunch of the single player and then doing some multiplayer from that as well, this honestly feels like probably the best Halo multiplayer experience I've had since 2 or 3. I have a hard time, and people who are more into Halo multiplayer, I'm sure, can tell me exactly what the difference is. But there's something about the way Halo multiplayer has felt since 343 took it over, and even since Halo Reach, I think, that
I like
hasn't,
Reach. I like Reach a lot.
Fine.
But Reach is where they added the powers, right?
Yeah, and that's always felt a little awkward to me.
Yeah.
And then with 343, I just always felt the multiplayer felt a little stiffer, less arcadey, and a bit more Call of Duty.
It has been a long time since I've played 343 Halo multiplayer, but Halo 4 was the last time I spent any substantial time with it, and I was extremely disappointed by it.
Yeah, like it'll come up in the like, so if you've played the Halo Master Chief Collection, when you go into multiplayer, by default, it just shuffles you randomly through 1, 2, 3, 4 ODST and Reach. And like, I don't know those maps super well off the top of my head, but I can always like feel when we're playing a Halo 4 multiplayer game, because it just has a different feel to it. And Halo 5 was kind of the same way. Though Halo 5 is definitely the one I have the least experience with. This feels just way more snappy and fast and arcadey. And it feels like Quake, which is what I think the original Halo was very directly emulating.
Yeah, I mean, the Marathon is the direct lineage with Bungie, but like that's all of that Quake, the Quake like influences and descendants.
Yeah, and I think, like, I know I've seen I don't know if this is the first one. They may have done this in the earlier 3-4-3 ones, but like one of the things I noticed is like you have like infinite sprint, which is something like in Quake, you were just moving fast all the time. And the powers have been there's some returning powers, but overall I feel like they're simplified a bit. Like the use case of them is a lot more obvious and they're just more fun to use. Like the obvious one, the new one they've added is the grapple, which when you pick that up just means, I mean, it works like, what's the Titanfall, not Titanfall.
Apex Legends.
Yeah. So it works like that, where you aim at a spot on the screen and it grapples onto it and then you can swing around. And it's just, it's fun and it fits in with the fast movement elements that Halo pulls from stuff like Quake. And the whole multiplayer experience just feels more like it knows what it's trying to accomplish, as opposed to the last few that have felt like they want to be Call of Duty or something, but they're still implementing these random elements of old Halo. So it just feels like Call of Duty, but for some reason you can get in a Banshee and fly around. Like it's the 4 and 5 just felt so dissonant and like they didn't have a plan. This just instantly, as soon as you get into it, it just feels like yes, this is. This feels like Halo, and this is great. The other thing I noticed is that because this is free to play, I am no longer the worst person in every match. Like I was playing the other night, and like I was actually like winning and like placing highly on like team games, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna go do my ranked matches, because in Halo, like you have like your social matches where it's just kind of a free for all of whatever levels and ranks playing together. And then you have ranked games where it figures out kind of how good you are and then tries to match you with people at your level. Yeah. And then you can rank up and stuff like that. And so I was like, well, I am crushing against the free to play audience. I'm gonna go do my 10 rank placement matches, which put me at gold level 2, which is like right around like the high end of average, which for me is an extremely high rank in Halo.
Yeah, I think that was my, like, that kind of play was my peak. Yeah, like, I'd probably 2-3 to Reach was probably, like, the, yeah, like, that era.
Yeah.
It's weird because I don't think 3 is my favorite. Like, I think I have more fond memories of 2, and I also liked Reach a lot, but 3 was just the era that I probably played the most.
I played a lot
college.
Of... college. Well, I played a lot of 3 because in 3, and I think you could do this, you might have been able to do this in 2, but I don't think I had, so I played the first one online a lot because I had it on PC, and so the online was free, and it had a, like, I'm pretty sure you can still go play it online, like the servers just stayed up forever. 2, I didn't have Xbox Live for, but 3, I had Xbox Live, and you could do split screen and bring someone with you online, which was incredible.
You could do that in Reach. Too, I think.
I think you've been able to do that in all. I don't think you can do that in 5, though they may have patched it in.
In 4, I think you could even do it.
I think you could do it in 4. Yeah, I think you can do it in all the 360.
So the problem with 4, if memory serves, and this is, it's been, I mean, 4 is what, 2012? That's probably the last time I played that one as well. I can't remember a lot of Diamond and Pearl. I'm not going to play remember that much about Halo 4 from 9 years ago.
Yeah.
But so that's a lot of how I always played Halo online would be, you know, have a buddy, and we'd go online playing, you know, 2-3 or Reach or whatever, and play online that way. And it used to be even like it would be me and a friend on one console, you know, playing against another friend of mine online who had a, you know, someone else there. So it was kind of like we would go around as a team of 4 people with split across 2 systems.
Yeah.
And I think you could do that in 4, but the problem with 4 is because I think 4 is when it kind of embraced a lot more of that Call of Duty 4 like perk system.
Yeah.
And so you would have the main console player would be like super leveled up and have all these abilities, and the guests would have nothing. So it just completely ruined that experience.
Yeah, that's the other thing that this one does well is, because it's doing this, this is going to be a weird instance where I refer positively to free-to-play elements. But because it's doing that kind of free-to-play thing that you would see with something like Fortnite.
Yeah, the season pass, battle pass stuff.
Yeah, all of that stuff, in order to keep the game fair, has to be cosmetic, which also has the side effect of you leveling up and progressing through ranks and stuff does not give you better gear. Everyone is sort of on the same footing the whole way through. And I think that makes it way more fun. Like, that's like, I don't want to lose because somebody has like extra loadout slots that I haven't unlocked yet. Yeah. Like, we should all start with the same battle rifle and then pick up stuff around the map. It should like give me Mario Kart, but with Halo. That's what I mean, I want.
And I understand that they're like, I'm by no means the you know, the target demographic for online multiplayer. But that's where I kind of got lost with a lot of that. I mean, I don't think Call of Duty is the problem necessarily.
No, it's just the easiest reference point.
But it's also that Call of Duty was just what introduced. I mean, Call of Duty 4 was revelatory in how it, you know, introduced that progression, that leveling up while you played online. And I think that kind of made a world of haves and have nots. And if you were going to dedicate yourself to playing Call of Duty, and a lot of people still do on an online, you know, annual basis. And I know like Warzone is doing a good thing. Hopefully it'll all crash and burn, you know, F you, Bobby Kotick. but like, that's where it kind of lost me, because I don't have the time to dedicate to an online game like that. And that's why something like Halo always appealed to me, and why I think I have infinite, I turned on my Xbox the other day and downloaded it. I've not played it. I've been in Pokemon Land. I've been living in Sinnoh, thinking about like, oh, maybe I can go back to the ring. But that's what Infinite appeals to me, is because I just want to be able to like sit down, pick up this game, mess around with it, and not have to worry about like, oh, if only I was level 42, then I'd have X, Y, and Z. Like, I think even Splatoon like has a little bit of a tough job of that.
Yeah.
I think Splatoon does a good job of kind of ramping you up, but there is that point where you're like, you could just be woefully behind high level play, because you don't have all the guns unlocked, you don't have all these different things, these who's its and what's its galore. And there was something that always appealed to me of the simplicity of even like playing, you know, why I played a lot of Perfect Dark on Xbox Live Arcade, is because it is just the, okay, everybody's going to start off with, you know, the same thing, and you just need to learn the map and figure out where the weapon spawns are.
Well, it's the same reason something like Fortnite works.
Yeah.
It's that same thing of, everybody starts on equal footing. It doesn't matter if this is your first game or your 1000th game. Y'all just start with a pickaxe. Good luck.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing where I mean, my time with Fortnite has been like fast and furious and not that long over the years. But whenever I do jump in, it's not like I'm really at this huge disadvantage. Like, okay, the map's different, I need to learn some things there. But the way that game is structured is it's very easy to just hop in and have a good time. Like, that was the thing that blew me away with Fortnite, is and why I immediately understood the appeal, even though I wasn't going to be a long-term player of it, was that, like, I just basically was like, okay, this is how things control. And then I was able to actually, like, compete. You know, I got, like, my one win. That was great. But like I could, you know, hang around like a cockroach into the top 20, top 10 without really ever playing the game.
Yeah. Yeah. You could feel good about your gameplay.
Yeah.
Without dedicating a huge amount of time to it.
And then you'd see someone like building all these bases real quick and you're like, well, I ain't doing that. All right. Just kill me.
Yeah.
Like, I'll see if I can get the shot off. Oh, nope. I didn't. Okay. That makes sense.
I'm real good at getting third place in Fortnite. that's my special skill.
But yeah, I mean, that's what encouraged about what I'm hearing about Infinite. Because I don't think there's a world in my future where I get super deep into Halo multiplayer again, but I'd love to just be able to dip in and have those fond memories come back of the time in my life where I played a lot more Halo.
Yeah, I think all I want from it is I want it to replace the literal Xbox 360 game that I'm still playing through my Series X as my default online. Like replace Halo 3 for me.
Yeah.
It's been a couple generations. Let's do this again, but, you know, give me new stuff, new maps, make it bigger.
So important thing, Energy Sword, is it in?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. What threw me off, actually, is so every other Halo game, if you're playing a team game, It's red versus blue. One team, all the armor goes to red. One team, all the armor goes to blue. No matter what custom armor you have for free-for-all, if you are playing in a team game, you are either red or blue.
Yeah.
Halo Infinite does not do that.
Oh,
you
no.
get your custom armor color.
That's
and
weird.
It's based on like it's the names over the characters and like their shield color that give it away, which threw me off at first.
Yeah.
It also worked against me because I got into my first match and I like started by making my Spartan bright yellow because I like fun colors. And so I get in my first match. It's like a nighttime map. Everyone else is like dark gray and I'm wearing like safety vest yellow. Just like, woo.
Guys, I don't think they could see us. Oh, shit. They found me.
Who's this idiot? So that threw me off. But it's ultimately like I thought it was going to be a problem, but it. Once you understand how the game is telling you who's on what team, then it isn't an issue. It was weird at first.
Yeah. And can you like squad up and stuff? I assume you can.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We should try to play at some point.
Yeah. And I know it has full crossplay, and it's funny. When it loads into multiplayer, it shows you your loading bar and then also tells you when other people are still loading as opposed to like connecting to the server or whatever. So you can actually like, kind of appreciate the speed of your Xbox Series X because it goes whoop, I'm ready, and then you just sit there and wait for the slower PCs and the Xbox Ones to load, and you can tell when you're in a match with like everybody's playing on Series X or a fast PC because it just loads up right away.
That's fine.
So I wonder right now I think the crossplay option is grayed out as just permanently turned on. I'd be interested in once that option becomes active, if I can choose not to play with like base model Xbox One, because if I were playing on base model Xbox One, I would want the option to not play against the Xbox Series X.
Yeah.
Because it's 30 frames per second versus 60. And that's a bit of a advantage disadvantage.
It's definitely, it's great that it has crossplay though, because it makes it so open.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the, like, it's another game that, I mean, maybe I'll make a fool and like in a month this will be the Halo cast, but it's like Sea of Thieves, where Sea of Thieves is a game that I was like, oh, I'll mess around with this, I don't think I'm gonna play it that long, and then I played a ton of it last year, and a lot of that was because it was so easy to like play with someone playing on an Xbox One and a Series X and a PC and their phone, like
it's I've had the same thing with Minecraft, where I'd have, you know, my nephews are over at my parents for the holidays and there's somebody on a Switch and somebody on a laptop and a couple on a tablet and two on their phones, and everybody's playing in the same world, and it's like weird. This is a terrifying, crazy future, and they're all signed into their Xbox Live accounts despite none of them playing on an Xbox platform. Like, they're all getting achievements. It's such a bizarre world, but it's good and I like it, and we should support it. The other thing that I've been playing,
The Wild at Heart. That's that game's out on Switch. Check it out, everybody. Go on. Go ahead, talk about your game.
Oh, I was going to say the other thing I've been playing that is like the polar opposite of Halo is Grow Song of the Evertree, which is the new game from
Prideful Sloth.
There it is. Prideful Sloth. Yeah, I knew it was something sloth. They're the developers behind Yonder, the Cloudcatcher Chronicles. Which is one of the most popular reviews on our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
That game was back in like 2018.
I think it was 2018. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a fairly early Switch game, and was popular at the time for sort of blending like Animal Crossing with Breath of the Wild. It was this giant kind of open world RPG, but with no combat. And it was cool, and it had a lot of neat ideas. Grow Song of the Evertree, which I'm just going to call Grow because that title's too long, is just Yonder, but way more refined and with an actual like direction and with better art design. The whole idea is there's this tree that's like kind of the giant world tree type thing of every RPG. And there's a village of humans that live under it. And they cultivate these worlds up in the branches of the tree. But then there's an evil poison called the Withering that essentially kills the tree, and you are the last human left, and you need to tend to the tree. And it's these kind of gardens on each of the tree's branches to bring it back to life and restore the village below. And so it is a combination of when you're up in the tree, it's like a gardening simulator where you're clearing out rubble and planting seeds and watering them and taking care of them. And eventually, like, animals and bug life show up and you're taking care of those too, and growing these gardens. And then also harvesting the resources you get from those gardens, which you're technically an alchemist. And in the very vague definition of alchemy, you then turn all the things that you've harvested into like general concepts, like cozy and warm and stuff like that. And so you then use those as resources. And as the withering is pushed back in this village, you are able to use those to like build houses and bakeries and inns and cafes and things like that. And as you grow your town, people will show up and you will talk to them and assign them houses and give them jobs. And they'll then give you like quests and things to make them happier. And so it's a combination of gardening simulator / city builder life sim. And it's just adorable and cozy and so pleasant. And like Yonder, there's no real combat and you're never in danger. You just sort of play it at your own pace. So it comes off very much like Yonder, where it's Animal Crossing Harvest Moon of the Wild. and it's just pleasant to play. I sat down with it the other night thinking, okay, I'm going to play an hour or two of this. My wife was at a choir practice. So I'm like, I have the evening to myself. I'll play a couple hours of this and then I'll hop over and play a few rounds of Halo. I played from like 7 p.m. until midnight without really realizing that's what I was doing. Because it was always like, I'll do one more day. I want to see, like, I want to get my garden grown out and I'd really like to build a new park for my village. And yeah, it's just so weirdly addictive. And it looks really nice. If you've played Yonder, you know that's a pretty visually impressive game.
Yeah, especially for when it came out on the Switch's life. Like, yes. And memory serves, it ran pretty well. Like, I didn't love Yonder. Grow definitely seems like it builds on what I liked about Yonder and gave it more direction, because that's what, like, Yonder, I was like, okay, this looks nice, now what?
Yeah, I think in retrospect, Grow makes Yonder look worse. Like, I like Grow a lot. I think we gave it I like Yonder a lot. I think we gave it a good score when it came out. But Grow really takes all of those concepts and just gives it a direction. Like, Yonder winds up feeling like sort of a prototype in comparison. I will say this one it's out now. We got the code at launch. And it's also out on PlayStation and Xbox and I think PC. The Switch version doesn't run as well as Yonder, but I think it looks better. So I kind of can forgive some of the performance issues. And also, it's a game where you just walk around gardening and talking to people. So like, some frame rate hiccups now and then doesn't, like, it affects the presentation a little bit, but it's not like you're going to lose combat because of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's, I'm disturbingly addicted to it, and I will have a review out at some point once I can stop playing it for long enough to write a review, but I like it a lot.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to, well, I know Jordan's going to be doing the review of Ruined King, a League of Legends story. I have that on my Switch for when I get out of Sinnoh and play Halo and all these other things that I hopefully will have time for. But that is a new RPG from the guys who made Battle Chasers Night War and Darksiders Genesis. Very excited to play that because it just looks like it's Battle Chasers Night War 2, but with like League of Legends stuff. And I just love the idea that they adapted a lot of like the MOBA combat into an RPG turn-based battle system. And
yeah,
I'm just legitimately looking forward to playing that game because, like, I kind of paid attention to that Riot Forge indie showcase the other day because I was like, I wonder what the update on that game is going to be, not expecting it to actually come out literally that day.
Yeah, I was really impressed watching all of those. I their approach with all of these games, the like four League of Legends games they're doing, seems to have just been like, go to a studio that has made a game that they like and essentially say, can you do that, but with our IP?
Yeah.
Because like the other, like they went to
Choice Provisions.
Yeah, Choice Provisions for essentially Bit Trip Runner, Tequila Works.
Tequila Works for like another Rhyme.
Yeah, which is great. I love Rhyme, so please, yes, thank you. And then,
I forget the fourth one. It's like a 2D platformer is the fourth one, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I can't remember who makes it.
And I think they tease more in the future, but it's just a good way to go about that for expanding your IP is that like they're just like, all right, let's take these strong games from other developers and, you know, build on the story in the world. I've heard that the Netflix show that they have, Arcane, I think.
Yeah, that's supposed to be great. Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing where like, yo, I ain't gonna play LOL. Like that. Yeah. That shit, I messed around with it ages ago. Like it's just not for me. But there's a good chance that I play Ruined King and then I'm like, oh, you know what? Like this is a fun fantasy world. Let me watch the Netflix show. It's just really smart, and also it looks like we're gonna get good games out of it.
Yeah, well, and good games where, like, I mean, I spent the whole presentation going, you know, oh well, that's from this developer. I know they do that kind of game well. I'll play that.
Yeah.
Where even with Ruined King, where it's like this is not my kind of game, but I like this developer, and you know, obviously I like their art style. And so like I might. If that goes on sale, I'd give that a shot.
Yeah.
I think they're doing a very good job of luring in new audiences. And it's like impressive from like a marketing standpoint, just how smart it is.
Well, I think we got before we go, famous last words, but this might be a shorter episode. If you see another half an hour to 40 minutes after this point, just know I'm full of shit.
Yeah. We got talking about Star Wars again.
Yeah, we got a piece of listener mail, and Woody says, do you think Nintendo will try to keep the interest in Metroid going until they deliver Metroid Prime 4? Similar to Zelda, by supplying smaller or re-release games while we all wait for the next big one, could a Metroid game and watch be out next holiday? How about an indie developer to have a go similar to Cadence of Hyrule? Personally, I'd like to see the guys behind Yoku's Island Express do a pinball Metroid game. What indie developer would you like to have a go and why? I first want to point out, thank you, Woody, for writing in. I want to point out that the Yoku's Island Express developers, I believe, aren't a thing anymore. I know one of the people from that, because they're all like ex-Starbreeze developers, and I think they're all in different places now, because I believe Yoku's Island Express did not sell well, which sucks, because it was a cool idea, like clever game, a lot of heart in it. I know that. One of the people who worked on that game is the person behind like Colors 3D, and they also had, I forget what that is, it like Colors Live?
Yeah, Colors Live is the Switch version.
It's a successful Switch Kickstarter, and now the game, I believe, is out.
Yep.
Yeah, the game is out on the eShop as well.
Yep.
So I think those developers all kind of, you know, landed on their feet, but unfortunately, Villa Gorilla and the developer behind Yoku's Island Express is not in a place where they could make a Metroid pinball game. But good for you, Metroid Prime Pinball still exists.
Yeah, I was going to say, we joked about this before we started recording. We're like, we're not sure if he knows that Metroid Prime Pinball exists and wants another one, or if we're going to make your day by telling you that Metroid Prime Pinball exists and it's great and you should play it.
Yeah, because the company that made Metroid Prime Pinball, I believe they are not around anymore either.
Who made Metroid Prime Pinball?
Fuse Games, I think.
Okay.
I think their last thing was a DSiWare pinball game that Nintendo put out. Fuse Games is, they're Silverball Studios, but they stopped working with Nintendo and haven't put out a game since 2014.
Because they've been working hard
on Metroid Prime Pinball Trilogy.
Yes. They had to make two more games. And then, like, Federation Force came out, and they had to make one for that. It was a whole thing. But to answer the actual question...
Yeah.
The Game & Watch thing actually came up at work the other day, because we were talking about, like, you know, what other franchises Kirby. Could yes, Kirby would actually be a good one.
Yeah.
Metroid has the problem of like the Zelda one, I think is honestly kind of good because it has two great NES games on it. And then like Link's Awakening, which is that's a beefy like you get three really like substantial games. Like it's honestly, you know, obviously it's a collector's item as far as the value goes, but like there's some content on that thing.
Yeah.
That makes me feel like I feel way better about at that than I do with like the Mario one.
I agree. I actually have the Zelda one. I have it turned off now because it does have like the every hour on the hour, it does the little da-na-na-na-na. But I've had it plugged in while I work during the day. So that I have a little Game & Watch clock up. Because it comes like the box that you get it in, it like it's a little stand for it. It's fantastic. It's really good.
That is my complaint about these new Game & Watches, is that the original Game & Watches had a little metal kickstand that folded out from the back of them, and the new ones don't. So having the box be a stand is nice, but like just put the little flippy thingy on the back so I can just stand it up.
I do. Yeah, like the Zelda Game & Watch rules. I do love how easy it is. Like each one has, you can just like hold A when you boot up the game and you'll just have like full hearts.
I did not know that.
Yeah, there's a couple little tricks that, and like I think in Link's Awakening you start off with like a level 2 sword. In Zelda 2 you'll have like your magic and attack be maxed out at the beginning too.
Oh cool.
It's really nice, but like after Mario and Zelda it gets real thin real quick as to what could even be a possibility.
Cuz for Metroid, I mean obviously you put NES Metroid on there. And then like Metroid 2, because I guess Game Boy games are viable. Yeah. But to do Super Metroid, like they're not going to put L and R buttons on the Game & Watch. So like that wouldn't really work. I guess you could do one of the Game Boy Advance ones.
They still need the shoulder buttons.
Yeah. I mean, you could do like a diamond for those, I guess, like a 4-button diamond and maybe kind of get away with it.
It gets hard.
You know what would work? You could do Metroid Prime Pinball. You could do one of the dual screen Game & Watches.
Yeah.
Do Metro Prime Pinball and
Federation Force.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so I'm not sure what.
I also think merch wise, Metroid doesn't have the reach for a Game & Watch. If you think about like Nintendo franchises that have the reach for a Game & Watch beyond Mario and any spinoffs, because I guess like a Mario Kart Game & Watch is something that. That might be able to happen, but like what is it, Animal Crossing, Fire Emblem, maybe Kirby?
I think the next one they do is Donkey Kong.
Because
you have three arcade games.
Yeah.
And then if you want to branch out, you do Donkey Kong 94.
Yeah.
DK
94 on a Game & Watch, that would be incredible. Yeah.
And there are actual like Donkey Kong Game & Watch games that were made for the single screen Game & Watches, which I think the problem with Zelda is that it's single screen, or it's there was a Zelda Game & Watch, but it was a dual screen game, I believe.
I do the Link Vermin game that they have. It's cute.
It would be cool if with Donkey Kong, you could actually just put, like, I know Donkey Kong Jr. is a single screen Game & Watch game.
Yeah.
So you could just put that on there.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't even think it's a hot take. I don't think they ever make another one of these Game & Watches.
Yeah, I don't know how well they're selling.
Yeah.
I don't know how well, like, I buy them.
I think
them,
the Mario and Zelda both worked out for the anniversaries. The Donkey Kong one does make, I could see that happening, especially, having the movies come out and stuff too. I think having, that kind of being a little bit of a tie-in might work.
Yeah.
But it'll only be Mario related and that's it.
Yeah. Though, and like this will never happen, but what I would really like would be a Game & Watch. That's just a Game & Watch that has a bunch of Game & Watch games on it.
Game & Watch gallery.
Yeah, like that would be awesome.
Yeah, the Game & Watch galleries were super fun. I miss them.
Yeah. Throw those. Make Game & Watch the next NSO system. Charge me an extra $30 for it. Emulate it poorly. It'll be great. But Metroid. I don't know how far out. Like, I think Prime 4 is a ways out. I think there is a good chance we get some sort of, I know there's been a lot of chatter about a remaster or something of the first Prime.
Prime Prime 4 went to retro. Was that? It was either the beginning of 2019 or the beginning of 2018. Either way, I mean, I think Prime 4 is like, especially with the pandemic, like 2023 at best. So we still probably have 2 years until Prime 4.
It was January 25th, 2019.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely 2023 at best.
Yeah.
Because I think what, like, you can probably guess that, like, retro took over development at optimistically fall of 2018, or at least that might have been like when the transfer was happening. Yeah. Factor in the fact that the pandemic probably slowed things up, and right now they are 3 years into development of a AAA game. They're probably going to need that. Like, I think that'll be a yeah. I mean, from when retro got the game, 4 to 5 years of development minimum.
Yeah.
In my opinion, and that's not just that's factoring in COVID too, because guess what would be difficult in non-COVID? A Japanese video game developer working with a Western studio. Guess what becomes even harder when Kensuke Tanabe cannot fly to Texas. Like,
yes.
That's definitely going to strain development. I don't know if it's the entire reason that Advance Wars is delayed. Also, does anybody in Japan actually know that Advance Wars is coming out?
That's Kensuke Tanabe comes back from his business trip to Retro Studios and goes, "Have you guys heard of Advance Wars?"
Yeah, did you?
They're making games over there.
but I mean, like, yeah, it's just especially with the language barrier and, you know, just the time zone barrier and location barrier and everything. COVID development with those studios, very difficult. So I'm all aboard the Metroid Prime 1 re-release remaster 2022 hype train.
Yeah.
It's something I just want, period. And like, I would like to replay Metroid Prime on my Switch. That sounds like a thing that would be a good time.
I'd like it to happen before I cave and just replay Metroid Prime.
Oh, please. We are so close to that. Just like
I need them to announce it so I cannot start a replay. Maybe I'll just start with two. Maybe I'll replay Echoes and Corruption, assuming that by the time I'm done with those, there'll be some sort of remaster of the first one.
Yeah. So I do. I mean, I think to answer the question here, I think Metroid Prime 1 comes out on Switch in 2022. And I think that will be something that keep the Metroid momentum going. I think Nintendo should be smart enough to realize that, like, you can build off of Dread.
Yeah, I would assume they're looking at Dread and going, like, if they didn't have a plan before, they certainly are looking at it now and going, we might want to do something with that.
Yeah. And you could look at ahead. I mean, yeah, like, let's you know, pencil in Metroid Prime 4 for 2023 or 2024 as a release. I think maybe, and this is a very hopeful version of me coming out, maybe Metroid's a series that has something coming out every year for the next few years. Because if you think about it, then we got Dread 2021, 2022. That sounds like it could be Metroid Prime 1. 2023 or 2024, you have Metroid Prime 4. Maybe the other one, maybe Metroid Prime 2 and 3 come out. I know the rumors for Metroid Prime 1 is that it's like a full remake. Maybe 2 and 3 are more of a straight port. Or maybe even the year that Metroid Prime 4 doesn't come out, maybe that's when we get some sort of, you know, a la the Castlevania Advance Collection. Maybe you get Zero Mission and Fusion in a 2-pack on the Switch.
There's also always, you know, the possibility that Mercury Steam takes their engine and goes, we want to do Fusion now.
Yeah,
we've been trying for a long time.
Yeah,
or they, you know, make an HD version of Samus Returns or something like that.
Yeah, like I'm really curious to see what's going to happen with Mercury Steam, because it was almost 4 years to the day between Samus Returns and Dread. You would think that hopefully you wouldn't need 4 years, because they do have like kind of like the, you know, they made one in on HD on the new platform.
Yeah,
like. But I would still say the absolute earliest for a follow-up to Dread, whatever that would be like 3 years from now.
So, interesting thing about Dread and Samus Returns that I picked up doing that Know Your Developers video for Mercury Steam, I think technically Samus Returns and Dread run in the same engine.
Oh.
So that might not be as difficult as it would be otherwise.
So then, like, maybe, well, if that were the case, then it still took 4 years for them to release Dread. So
right, then if they, Dread if is, you I didn't mean, you're working with the HD assets yeah, and yeah, stuff like that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then maybe we do get Samus Returns HD if that's possible to update.
Well, and it, you know, there wouldn't be, you know, you're not, unlike Dread, you're not doing new game design. Though Samus Returns could use a little bit of that if they wanted to throw something.
Yeah, yeah, I think if you do Samus Returns on Switch, I feel like doing some kind of like DX content to it would be a good idea.
Just add more variety, add more different kinds of Metroid fights.
I hope Metroid Prime 4 comes out and it's good.
Yeah,
we have no idea what that game is.
I, you know, there's hope with one of the cool things about Metroid Prime 4 is being made by an American developer. There is hope that eventually somebody in power at Retro Studios will leave Retro Studios and in several years be willing to talk about the development of Metroid Prime 4. Like, you know, if it was internal
Black
at Nintendo
box somehow, I don't get it in this world.
I think this is a game that we will, it's like within the next 10 years, I think we will know a lot about the development of this game.
Well, I mean, we'll also, hopefully it'll be out by then.
Oh yes. But I mean, I mean, like, what was presuming it was Bandai Namco, what was their version? What didn't Nintendo like? Did Retro really start from scratch? Did they pick up some pieces from where Bandai Namco were? Like, what was the story of the development of this game? I feel like there is a real chance, because it's Retro Studios, and those guys in the past, the people who have left Retro Studios since Prime, have been very open about talking about Prime.
Yep.
I think there's a real chance that we get a lot of information about what happened during the development of this game.
Yeah.
And poor Bandai, like, they should have warned Bandai Namco that Metroid Prime is cursed to never go smoothly before they started working on it. They weren't ready.
So the last part of this that we haven't, this question that we haven't addressed, good question. Thanks, Woody. Indie developer working on a Metroid game. I don't know if you ever heard of this studio. It's a Spanish studio. They worked with Konami on a Castlevania game.
Oh yeah.
Maybe they can make a good Metroid game.
Yeah. Are you suggesting that we're already there? Much like there's already Metroid Prime Pinball, we also already have Indie Metroid, and it's just Metroid Dread.
But I mean, as far as like something like a Cadence of Hyrule, I mean, just do a Cadence of Zebes. I don't know. Play that. Yeah, Dancing Samus, Dancing Metroid.
The only song is
Norfair.
Is Norfair.
But even just taking it from the, I mean, Yoki's Island Express, it'd just be Metroid Prime Pinball.
Yeah.
I see how Woody reached his idea of Yoki's Island Express, because it is easy to just be like, oh, like get like the, you know, Tom Happ or Way Forward to make a 2D Metroid game. But thinking about it from a, like, what's an indie game that I would like to, like, a different genre.
Right. Because that's the thing about Cadence of Hyrule, is they didn't just make a Zelda game.
Although, like, it is basically a 2D Zelda game.
Kind of. Like, but not in the way, like, they didn't.
Yeah, it is non-traditional.
If when you play Crypt of the Necrodancer, you don't go, oh, cool, a Zelda game. You know what I mean? Like, it's not until you see Link in it that you go, oh, yeah, that is kind of like Zelda.
Okay, here's, I don't even know, Greg Lobanov, he did the indie game Chicory that came out this year. He also did this game on that came out on Switch called Wander Song, which is beautiful and incredible, and I highly recommend it. I don't know, let him, like that, you know, that group of developers make like a weird narrative driven side scroller with Samus about like her overcoming her imposter syndrome or something. I don't know. I'm trying to think of something out of the box. Like, I'd,
how about we give the Rebel Galaxy Outlaw guys a Metroid space combat sim where you pick up bounties and then go like hunt down space pirates and space criminals as Samus and her gunship.
Yeah, no, that would be awesome. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, just Rogue Squadron, but with Samus.
Yeah. yeah, do lean into like the outer space spaceship yeah. element of Metroid.
Or like it's like Goat Simulator, but it's Metroid Simulator.
Do you play as a Metroid?
Yes.
Okay. We could do some sort of like Tomodachi Gigapet kind of thing with the animals from Super Metroid.
You can just let them die.
Yeah, that's all. They like try to teach you how to wall jump and then you just kill them.
You just take out a gun.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't Grand feed Theft them, Metroid. They'll just wall jump right out of your game and leave.
What if I don't know. I'm trying to figure out a way to make F-Zero out of this.
As with most things,
Samus's gunship is now a racing ship, and it's like Yakuza, and Captain Falcon's there, and you race, and you use Falcon punches and stuff.
I'm pretty sure this isn't this one of the Smash Bros. Character reveal trailers? This feels familiar in some way.
Pretty much. I mean, just I would like the F-Zero Yakuza game. That's all I want.
Yeah.
Whatever roads I have to get. If it's twisting a question about Metroid, I'll try to will it.
I would like Metroid to be made by the people that I want it to be a Star Fox game where you don't play Samus. It's like Samus, but she's a fox and has a team of other animals, but they're still bounty hunters, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, sort of. I mean, it is just like, I don't think anyone at Nintendo actually knows what a bounty hunter is.
Yeah, that's come up. Yeah.
I feel like the Rebel Galaxy Outlaw developers would like pitch this to Nintendo and they'll be like, no, but that's not what Samus does.
Yeah.
And then they just stare blankly back at Nintendo being like,
blink, blink. But
you said she's a bounty hunter. And they're like, yeah, she flies around in her ship. And it's like, that's not what a bounty hunter is. She's like Boba Fett.
Yeah.
Or even, yeah, do the walking, just basically make it, it's like the Mandalorian, but for some reason, it's just Samus walking around with a baby Metroid.
You know, that kind of works, yeah.
Like, they already, like, Metroid Prime initially was supposed to be, like, the side story that now is, like, taking up 15 years of Samus's life in between Metroid 1 and 2.
The 15 years that take place in the week between these two games, yeah.
But so you can totally just expand it where it's just Samus and the baby Metroid going on adventures.
Yeah, that is, you know, you could just squeeze an entire game on her return flight before Super Metroid.
She fights Ridley again.
You could do a game where you just play as Ridley, constantly being reincarnated only to die again.
The Devolver game Carry On. But it's a Metroidvania where you play as Ridley.
You have a button to scream and it just blows out your speakers every time you push it.
I think we came up with some good ideas.
I think more than I thought. But I would honestly trade all of those in for another Metroid pinball game
Federation Force HD.
You know, I would like, and I say like, I think this would honestly be a good idea. I think Metroid Prime 4 should have online multiplayer.
Yeah,
I think they should do the Metroid Echoes thing. And like give it legitimately like 4v4 very Quake style online multiplayer, because obviously Nintendo doesn't have that. The closest thing they have is Splatoon, which is a very different tone. And I think the Metroid universe would support it very well.
Like it did with Federation Force.
Metroid Prime Hunters, like they've done this before.
Yeah.
They made a straight up Halo clone on a DS.
We talked about how is Nintendo going to keep the Metroid train going? Is there a world where maybe Metroid Prime 4's campaign is like 2024, keeps getting delayed, and maybe in 2023 they release like, here's Metroid Prime 4 multiplayer?
Yeah, well, I mean,
Online subscription. You can play this game in multiplayer. The single player game is coming out next year, but have fun with this multiplayer mode.
Yeah, just, I mean, on like, do like, you have a franchise, do Metroid Prime Hunters 2,
yeah,
which is probably too long of a name.
What's NST doing? Nothing. Okay.
Know.
Yeah,
do they exist? Who knows?
Yeah, well, actually no, they helped with Bowser's Fury, like literally
there you go. Well, unless they're busy making the next Mario game that would be better than Odyssey.
Next Level Games is probably working on something. I mean, I feel like if Nintendo's like, Next Level Games, we're gonna buy you and you're gonna make Federation Force 2. And then, like, all of a sudden, just everybody quits Next Level Games.
Oh, yeah. If I'm at Next Level Games, I have PTSD from the hate mail I'm sure they got.
And that is,
from
once
psycho
again,
fans.
Want to clarify, love me a Metroid Prime Federation Force. I just,
yeah, it's great.
I cannot imagine. I assume that the people at Next Level Games are very proud of what they made, as they should be, because that game rocks. But if I went through that as a developer and dealt with all the crap that people levied at that game, mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to revisit it either. I mean, then they made Luigi's Mansion 3. That was widely regarded as good. Hopefully they make something that's not Luigi's Mansion. Not that, you know, Luigi's Mansion
3 is good.
I just would not want to see them make something else.
They've got the Sakurai thing. If they're very talented, please let them make multiple things. Okay, well, I think that's an episode.
Indeed it is.
If you would like to pitch your Metroid indie idea, or you know what? Write in and let me know if you play Halo for the multiplayer or the campaign to settle the apparent argument that me and Neil have about these games.
I just laughed because they compared the Paramount Plus Halo show as Halo having as deep of a universe as Marvel and Star Wars.
That's fair, but yeah, there were other things implied, Neil, and
I did say that people play Halo largely for the multiplayer and not the story. I did later clarify that I also meant the co-op campaign. That is something that I have had fun playing in my day and heard other people enjoy.
Uh-huh.
And I know you love your C-tier sci-fi, John.
It's so good.
And I don't even, once again, don't even hate this Halo story. I just don't think the lore is that great. I think it's interesting. I like that they committed to making a lot of lore. I think it's okay. It's fine. It's better than a lot of other video game stories. I'll give it that.
So write in and tell us why Neil is so wrong about underselling the Halo lore in your listener mail, and or ask us about anything else you want to ask us about. Yeah. Maybe
we like people.
Yeah, maybe it's Pokemon. Maybe it's Skyward Sword. There's never enough of that. Maybe it's Metroid or Kirby. You could talk about Kirby. Write on in to connectivity@NintendoWorldReport.com or scream at us on Twitter. That's at ConnectivityNWR. And yeah, I think that's all the things, right? If you're on a platform where you can review this, you could do that. That'd be neat. I think that's everything. So thanks, Neil, for joining me as usual.
Of course. Now we've got to go plan episode 300.
Yeah, we might see you next. We'll see you for probably an episode 300 at some point.
When we see you.
Yeah, it may not be next week due to American holidays. Sorry if you're outside of the U.S. and have no idea why there's no podcast next week, if there isn't one. All right. Goodbye.
Bye.